Okay, so I am back. To help you with the logic, I suggested that you consider how eating influences your body weight and how exercising influences your body weight. And if you thought about that, then I guess you have already some thoughts about that. Let's do that with Benzin, because I want to illustrate one point with that, which is very important. So I share the application, entire screen, share here, new model. No, actually, I will keep that one because I want to come back to that. So let's go back to the issue that I put here. So eating weight, body weight, how does this influence? Does it have positive or negative polarity? Positive polarity means if everything else is equal, this is very important. Everything else that could influence your weight is kept constant, like running and so on and so on. Consider only the effect of eating. So if everything else is the same, the more you eat, the more your weight increases. The less you eat, the less your weight increases. Or rather, the less you eat, the more your weight goes down. Here we are assuming that eating is measured in calories. So the more calories you get through eating, the higher your weight becomes, and the less calories, the less you weight. So they move in the same direction, and you have a positive polarity. Then I ask you, consider what happens if you are doing exercise, burning calories. So we put here exercise, like running, swimming, bicycling, whatever. How does this influence weight? We put the arrow. And now it's again important. We are only talking about the connection between exercise and weight. Keep everything else constant. Keep eating constant. Keep everything else that your weight may be influenced. Consider only how burning more calories, doing more exercise, influences your weight. So the more calories you burn, the less you weight. The less calories you burn, the more you weight. So you have opposite direction between cause and effect. So you have a negative polarity. Okay? So I want you to hear from you if this is a clear example. Do you agree? Okay. Still, I would like to go back to the example, because in reality, things get complicated. So the logic is still correct. This is correct. But in practice, what happens when people who have overweight start doing more exercise so as to get the weight down? This is still correct, but it's only part of the picture. Because for me, what happens when you burn calories is that you get more hungry. Okay, let me take it here. We put hunger here. Feeling hungry. Or let's call it perhaps feeling hungry. So The more you exercise, the hungrier you feel, everything being equal. How is the polarity? The more calories you burn, the hungrier you feel, so you have a positive polarity. And what happens if you are hungry and you do not restrict yourself? You will then eat more. So with positive polarity. So what happens in many real situations is you are doing exercise to reduce your weight, but this is being counteracted by you getting hungry and eating more, which mitigates the effect of exercise. This is a well-known problem. My point in showing this is that in systems, you need to look for all the important repercussions. So you will have to complete the diagram until you have captured everything that is important. Still, this is an example, because there are people who do exercise and go down in weight. And that's because they have the discipline also to control how much they eat and so on. But still, it's a tough issue. The important thing is, in all these connections, all the time, you have to consider them separately. The cause with the effect, if you are considering this. If you are considering exercise and weight, forget about everything else and ask yourself, what happens if I exercise more, burn more calories with my weight, and forget about everything else. And then ask the question, if I do more exercise and burn calories, what happens to my feeling hungry? Well, normally people will feel more hungry if they burn a lot of calories. So normally you have this connection here, and so on and so on. So did you get some help from this exercise? Did the logic become a little bit clearer? Okay. Then I would like to go back to the previous example, because I want to make one point as to the model of the exercise number one. In the what I did was that I expressed the same logic of exercise one with different variables, in fact with one less variable. What I want to show you is that it doesn't change the nature of the feedback loop. If you look now at the solution that I published, let's share the file. It takes a little bit of time until this responds. Okay, now we are on board. Here is the solution. Then we had a reinforcing feedback loop, application to production. The more application allocation to production, the less to security. The less to security, the more security incidents. The more security incidents, the more production problems. The more production problems, the less throughput. The less you put, the more the gap increases. The more the gap increases, the more you have to allocate, and so on. So you have a reinforcing feedback loop, which you also get by counting the minuses. 1, 2, 3, 4 minuses in the loop, so it must be reinforcing. When you get an even number of negative polarities, of minuses, you have a reinforcing. Now, in the other solution that I did with Vensim, we don't have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 variables in the loop. I think we have 5, and they are a bit different. So let's now go to the Vensim and see if that changes the polarity. Share application, entire screen, share, then sim, exercise one. So now I have a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 variables in the loop. Before I had 6. The reason is that I skipped one variable here, I make the direct connection for instance to throughput. What kind of loop is this? Let's count the minuses. 1, 2, 3, 4, still even. So this is reinforcing, as before. I have a balancing loop here. This was balancing, as before. And this one is reinforcing. Even if I use in different variables. So the logic, if you do it very strictly, is the same. Now as to the problems that you have with polarities. Basically, I can explain it to you, but I cannot understand it for you. So I try to do my best. For the understanding, you do need to exercise yourself. So my suggestion would be the following. Take the solutions of the exercises. Compare your solution with my solutions. Close my solution. Try to reproduce it by yourself. So that is the exercise. You have the guidance. I think my solutions are logically correct in the sense that the polarities and so are correct. I emphasize this of logically correct because I still want to make the point that there are situations where you may argue for a different archetype, different from mine. And if you have a good logic and can defend it, then that's okay. Because the point with an archetype is to initiate a discussion, sketch a path, and open the possibility to create later a simulation model. Ultimately, the desire and the point is to finish with a good simulation model where you can get security metrics and do exercises and so on and so on. But at the point of the archetypes, don't be afraid to create a good archetype where you are convinced of the logic and to defend it. So if you end up in your examination project with a different archetype than I would propose, it is not a reason for giving you a less good grade if your archetype is well reasoned, if the polarities are correct and well argumented. So that's what you have to care for. And otherwise, do please more exercises, repeat the exercises. And if you have questions in between, then contact me by email, Skype, or whatever. Now I think I have to return to the lecture so as to cover a bit more ground. And we can in between take more questions and so on. I try to help as much as I can. So if it's okay, I go back now to the sharing the lecture. Okay, I think I have the wrong lecture. Sorry. What happened here? Slides. Share file. I have so many entries here that I am having problems in hitting on the right one. Okay, now it comes. It takes always a little bit of time. The system is slow. I see my slides on the right hand side, but you don't see them yet. But now it will be coming. So, as I was saying, I got a funding for a PhD project. I enrolled Johannes Wiep, who had a lot of experience in practice. We were in Pittsburgh, and this resulted in a project in collaboration with Klaus-Peter Kosakowski. So the cooperation with the founder of the IF NSERD, Klaus-Peter Kosakowski, who is now professor in Hamburg. And we conducted group model building with them and produced this system dynamic model that you are seeing here. If you look at it, then it's more detailed, among other things, because we have it was a model that could be simulated. The model by Sterman and Ripenning that I showed you is a simplification that cannot be simulated. It needs more detail. This, what you are seeing here, is a model that ultimately could be simulated. Now, what you can see is a number of things that you will recognize from before. So the feedback loops that you see here, working harder, you see, working smarter, you see. You see the reinforcing loop here that you saw in the Ripenning-Sterman loop. So they are all there. But you see, and this is the loop that we call, the balancing loop that we call shortcuts. It's still there. There's another one, skipping information. Otherwise, in the details, you see that the working harder was what they call manually responding to incidents. Working smarter was about developing an automatic tool that will respond to, so to speak, well-known incidents. Those that you had from before a response to. If they were identified, you did not need to employ manual work on that if you had an automatic tool. So the strategy of the NSERD just to be able to cope with the flood, with increasing number of security incidents, was to work smarter by having a tool that took the known incidents and responded to them automatically so that the staff could concentrate on new incidents. That was the purpose. And here we identified in the group model building process pretty much the same loops that Ripenning and Sterman had. And in addition, we identified a very important new loop, skipping information. What is this? Well, as the number of incidents increase, the time to handle the incidents shrunk. Remember, that was while they were still developing the automatic tool to respond to those incidents. So they had to respond to them manually. There were more incidents to respond to. The number of resources increased not in proportion, didn't increase in proportion to the increase of incidents. So the response was to spend less and less and less time in responding to the incidents. So what happens if you spend less and less time? You are skipping information. You are doing less good work, the quality of the response decrease. This was very clearly shown in the simulations. When you simulated this, first you can compare the actual curve of incidents. You see the word low priority attacks. I have to explain that. A CSERT will classify the incidents in different priorities. Different CSERTs have different levels of classification. But basically, it's enough to consider two categories. High priority incidents, they are those that are new incidents that you haven't seen before, or incidents you still haven't developed a good response to. And low priority are those that are known and you can handle quicker once you have identified them. So what you see here is the the empirically detected low priority incidence in leaf insert over the time, over 10 years, and they simulated, you see the simulation reproduces quite well the historic. Then this is about the high priority incident response. The model was also quite good at reproducing the seen incidents, but we will now focus more on low priority incidents. Here you see the resources. The model were also able to reproduce this. And this is the workforce that was employed in manually handling the incidents. So you see a quite good agreement between simulation and empirical results. In the next slide, you see some other curves, empirical versus simulated. First of all, you see here with the increasing incidents, how the effort, the time spent on responding to incidents went less and less and less. That was the feedback loop skipping information that I mentioned. Then, I think this curve is the interesting one. The leaf insert tried to record, spend time improving response, and as you see they did it for a while and they had to stop it. Why did it stop? Well, that was the case that I indicated when we discussed the Repenning-Sturman problem. If you have a pressure to respond or a pressure to produce throughput, then you cannot, unless you have extra resources, you cannot sustain working smart. And that's what actually happened to the DF insert. They tried to work smart, but because of the increasing amount of incidents, they were under such strong pressure to respond that they had to give up developing the automation tool. So it broke down. So, seeing this, we concluded with some recommendation to the if insert. But first, generic conclusions. We see that quality improvement is, of course, important in security. It is needed for better response, also for get better cyber reporting, to increase the motivation to report. We see a very strong similarity in continuous improvement of security with traditional quality improvement processes, but because there is a much stronger external exogenous pressure to perform in security settings, there it is an even more difficult problem to achieve continuous security improvement than it is for corporations that are looking for to improving the services, the throughput. But then, the main recommendation to the offender, and they accepted that and understood that, was that they had to accept the fact that in order to do continuous security improvement, they had to respect the innovation. They had simply to allocate resources to innovation no matter what, and sustain that even under stronger pressures. That was a tough decision to make because they had to communicate to the constituency, we need to prioritize automation, we need to prioritize working smart, even if for a while you will notice that we are less good at solving low priority incidents. So they try to solve them in between by educating the constituents and so on. So it was a management decision, stick to quality improvement, because even if we see a worse situation to begin with, we have to go through the dry spell. And the DF insert of Klaus Peter Kosakowski did it, and turned out to be a winner among the scissors. So this concludes my presentation, my lecture about quality improvement for better dealing with low priority incidents. I stop this and can take some questions. Yes, William White says it seems that properly placed resources is the key. Yes, indeed, it is the key, but it is of course difficult because yes, what is the problem? The problem is this a tough management decision because think of the C-cert. The C-cert needs to be funded. What the constituency sees as their key performance indicator is how well are you dealing with my problems? And they are, if they have a problem now, they want you to solve it now. But the C-cert needs to tell them, if you want me to be able to solve the problems, increasing problems with novel security incidents and so on, then either you increase my resources so that I can working smart while I'm working hard, so to speak, while I'm able to respond, or you have to accept lower quality of the CSERT for a while until we're up with the automatic response system that will give responses to low priority incidents, and we can concentrate more on quality incidents. So it is a question of understanding that you have to make a tough decision. Either you increase the funding, or you have to accept for a while, as a dry spell, lower quality of response. Yes, you have lots of consultants until you're able to consult this problem. Yes, what happens when you engage consultants is that yes, in part, of course, they are interested in being re-engaged. But there is another deeper. Yes, if the consultants are, I like the comment by Rune, if the consultants really are helping to work smarter, then that would help. But very often the consultants come with solutions that need to be implemented, and then you have still the issue as to how well the problem owner, in this case ABB, is able to implement the solutions. The difference with the work group model building process is that the enterprise itself, the company itself, is involved in developing the solution. So it is their baby. It's easier to get acceptance for that. But I admit this is a complicated issue. Well, the consultants, using the consultants to work out, it will be perhaps outsourcing things, and that's what something that some companies have done. They found that they could concentrate on the most important issues. I want to point to one thing that you might find interesting. One, I have published already a possible examination project. And this examination project is related to security, or let me say, in additionally, it draws on some very, very important work done by Chris Zook, who is Harvard educated, and he's considered one of the big, big names in performance, company performance. He has written several books, and they are referred to in the examination paper. So some of you might find an additional gaining by looking at that project, because that will make you conversant with a work by Chris Zook on the importance of identifying the core of an enterprise, that is what you are best at, and then how to redefine the core as time changes and you have to move so as to keep being competitive. So these books by Chris Zook about the core and expanding the core, they could be very interesting for you. So I suggest now we could do another exercise. So let me load the exercise here. Share file, add files. Exercise. Which one of these? I think this one. It was a SF is stock and flow version of the SysIt model. It's not the one I wanted to show. So I wonder if I have it here. I wonder if I have the share file. Let me see. Maybe I have. I think it is this one. Transforming within the software system. Yes. Let me see. Sometimes I see the names of the files and I don't hit on the right one. Transforming. Yes. Transforming the model that we had in the lecture to a CSIRT model. And this should be a simple exercise. So what I want you to do is to look at the model, the Repenning-Sturma model for quality improvement paradox that was developed in class. The only thing you have to do is to change the name of a few variables so that it is a model for CSIRT. That's part one. Then you could add a new variable and connect it through an arrow so that it is expressed clearly that the CSIRT is under strong pressure to perform because of the attacks, external attacks. So I want to choose the model and express this again by showing you the model that needs to be transformed. So we stop this, look at this one, and wait a little bit until the slides appear. It uploading. Come on. Okay, now it comes. Not this one. this one. So the exercise is the following. In this model that you see here, some names should be changed so that it expresses the situation for a CSET. So do you have suggestions as to which variables should be renamed so that it is becomes specific for CSETs? You can simply go through the variables and say, how will you call this if you are thinking of a CSET? How will you call this if we are thinking of CSETs? And so on, going around. Some of these you don't change. And some of them you will rename so as to be specific for CSETs. Any suggestions? William White had a question as to the book by Zug. It is given, the name of the books they are giving in the examination project that I have published. We will have and see that later. So now the question is here, which variable names you suggest changing? From here, performance. Will you leave it at performance or will you call it something different? Well, the performance is what the CSET does. So Rune says change into incidents. Yes, I would include incidents, but what does the CSET do with the incidents? Some word that you would associate with that. Controlling the incidents. Incident control or incident handling, yes. So actual performance could be incident handling, CSET incident handling. And desired performance, that will be the goal that a CSET has. And that must be also related to incident handling. So these two will be changed to reflect that what the CSET does is handling incidents, and that the CSETs must have some goal for the number of incidents handled or quality of handling them. Actually, what I am asking you is not only about the names, but you should also think as to how to measure that in a CSET. And I am not asking you to finish the exercise now, but to get you thinking, and you can do that later as part of your homework. So now, if you have time spent working, you should rename this so that it reflects the handling of incidents again. So this will be the word working harder should reflect that it is the manual handling of incidents. Now, if you think back to the project that I just presented, the one that we did with the Avenger, so what kind of capability were they trying to improve? It was a CSET capability. So how will you call that? So here it's about how the people handle the incidents manually, whereas here, yes, I am asking about capability, but I would like you to think about a name that you could associate with the CSET. It's the capability of what? What tried the DFN CERT do? They tried to develop some tool that increase the CSAT capability. Yes, it has to do about the speed of handling, indeed. But in order to do that, what they did, expertise of handling as well, yes, but they did develop a tool. They did try to develop a tool, and that was about, was it incident handling capability? Yes, yes, that's all, it's correct. So I am not saying that it is wrong what you are saying. What I am trying is to hit the nail on the head. Yes, it's the real argument. Once you have advanced your capability, then it's forever there. But specifically, remember the lecture about the DFN cert. How did they try to increase their CSAT capability? What were they doing? How did they try to work smart? How did they spend time? On what did they spend time? A tool, yes. So, indeed. So, it was an automatic incident response tool. They tried to automate the responses, and they could do that by developing a tool that was able to decide, is this incident new or not? And it was new, classified, what kind of incident was. Was it port scanning or spam or was it this? And depending on the identified incident, then it suggested some solution. So they tried to automate the capability response. That's the key. And that's basically addresses the first question as to the variables that you have to need to change name. But I suggested one more thing. So there is a strong pressure, external pressure, to increase performance. So you can see that as opposed to a company where the goal to increase performance might be some vision or so on, in the case of a CSERT, the agents, the external attacks, they are determining what your goal should be. So in this case, you should add some external variable to that. We could look now at my proposed solution, if you like. There are different ways of expressing this. So let me go back to sharing files, adding files. I am looking now for the PowerPoint solution to that. It takes some time until I find a solution. Solution, transforming the repentance animal into a CSERT. I open that. It's taking a bit of time. Now it is there. Few seconds until it is active. Okay. So here you see ideas. So actually, I was not as specific in this solution here as we were in our discussion where we spoke about handling incidents. Here. A quick and dirty way could be put actual CSERT performance, desired CSERT incident handling performance. Here I am more explicit here. Desired incident handling performance, pressure to improve the CSERT capability,